All right. Ever wondered if you could just get away with anything, like absolutely anything, just by saying, "Hey, it's my religion"?
That's a fascinating question.
Well, today's deep dive, we're looking at United States versus Ballard, a Supreme Court case that wrestled with that very question.
This case really digs into the core of what religious freedom means in America, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
We're forced to confront those gray areas between, genuine belief and potential fraud. And how do you balance that with the First Amendment?
Yeah, and I think this case is especially interesting because it involves the I Am movement, led by the Ballard family back in the 1930s. They claim to have all these powers, healing the sick, talking to like ascended masters, all sorts of things.
They had a huge following too, and that's really where things get tricky, legally speaking, because with that large following came donations, and that's what landed the Ballards in hot water.
Yeah, they were accused of using the mail to solicit those donations based on what the government said were straight-up false claims.
Exactly, mail fraud.
But here's what I don't get, this whole concept of sincerity that the courts kept focusing on. The trial court told the jury they had to decide if the Ballards sincerely believed their claims, not if those claims were actually true. Doesn't that seem kind of, I don't know, slippery?
Oh, it is. And that's exactly why this case went all the way up to the Supreme Court. That difference between sincerely believing something and whether it's actually true, that's so crucial here. The higher court actually overturned the guilty verdict because they felt the jury should have had the chance to look at whether the Ballards' religious claims were objectively true.
Okay, so the Supreme Court had to step in and untangle this whole mess. What did they end up saying about this whole sincerity versus truth debate?
Well, Justice Douglas, who wrote the majority opinion, he basically said the First Amendment puts a hard stop on courts judging whether religious beliefs are true or not.
Interesting.
He made it pretty clear. He actually wrote, "Men may believe what they cannot prove. They may not be put to the proof of their religious doctrines or beliefs."
So even if a belief seems totally out there, the government can't just say, "Nope, that's fake," and go after someone based on that.
Exactly. They can't just dismiss a whole religion as bogus just because they don't buy the claims.
So wait, does that mean anyone can claim anything's part of their religion and be totally immune from, the law?
Now that is the million-dollar question, and that's why Ballard is still so relevant today. This case really highlights that tension between religious freedom and, well, preventing fraud. Even though the court can't say whether the belief itself is true or not, they can still look at the intent behind the actions.
So the focus shifts from what's in your head to what you're actually doing. Like, is there evidence that someone is deliberately trying to trick people or use their faith to make a buck?
That's where things get super nuanced, and we're going to dig into that tension and all that it implies in part two. But first, let's hear what the dissenting justices had to say.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into those counterarguments. They always spice things up.
Not everyone on the court agreed with Douglas's approach. Chief Justice Stone, for instance, argued that even if it's a religious belief, that shouldn't automatically protect you if you're committing fraud.
Yeah, Stone was basically saying, hey, you can't just use religion as a get out of jail free card to scam people, right?
He was worried that this ruling would make it almost impossible to prosecute people who use religion as a cover to basically cheat others out of their money. And then you've got Justice Jackson's dissent, which adds a whole other layer of
Oh,
complication.
yeah. What was Jackson's take on all of this?
Well, he was struggling with this question. How do you even figure out if someone is sincere about their belief if you can't look at whether the belief itself is true or not?
That's a really good point.
He pointed out that trying to separate the sincerity of the belief from the actual content of the belief, well, it gets really messy and subjective and could end up being unfair to smaller, less mainstream religions.
It's like a catch-22, right? If you can't say whether the belief itself is true, how can you tell if someone truly believes it or if they're just using it as a front?
And Jackson was really worried that this kind of legal scrutiny could easily turn into religious persecution. He actually wrote, "Prosecutions of this character easily could degenerate into religious persecution."
So how do you find that balance?
All right.
You want to protect religious freedom, but you also don't want to give people a free pass to exploit others in the name of religion. It seems like Ballard didn't really give us a clear answer, did it?
It really just highlighted this constant struggle to find that right balance. And, Ballard was decided way back in the 1940s, but the questions it raises are even more relevant today.
That's so true. We're living in a time where conspiracy theories and all sorts of fringe beliefs are spreading like wildfire, and some of them even try to use the language of religion to make themselves sound more legitimate. Does Ballard give these groups a way to deceive people and get away with it because of this legal precedent?
That's the big question courts are grappling with more and more these days. You see, Ballard said courts can't judge whether a religious belief is true or not, but it didn't really address what happens when those beliefs lead to actions that could be harmful to others.
So how do prosecutors deal with this gray area? If they can't directly challenge the belief itself, what kind of evidence can they use to prove that someone was intentionally trying to defraud others?
Well, they have to connect the dots between what people are saying and what they're actually doing, looking for things that don't add up. You know, inconsistencies in their behavior, evidence of maybe extravagant spending that doesn't really fit with their supposed religious values.
So if our rubber ducky guru from earlier was living it up in a mansion paid for by donations from his followers, that would probably raise some eyebrows, right?
Absolutely. Prosecutors can build their case by pointing out those contradictions and showing a pattern of behavior that suggests maybe things aren't as sincere as they seem.
It's almost like trying to catch a ghost. You can't see the ghost itself, so you have to look for the traces it leaves behind, right?
That's a great analogy. It's all about finding those real-world clues that tell a story that goes beyond just what people are claiming.
So let's talk about how Ballard has impacted other legal cases. Are there any specific examples that really show how this whole balancing act between religious freedom and potential fraud plays out in practice? We've covered a lot of ground with Ballard and, you know, all the challenges it brings up. Are there any other cases that really show how this whole idea has played out in the courts? Cases that really highlight that tension between religious freedom and the potential for fraud?
Oh, absolutely. One that comes to mind is Hernandez versus Commissioner of Internal Revenue. This case involved a couple who were Scientologists.
Okay.
And they wanted to claim a tax deduction for some payments they made to the church for religious training.
Interesting. So how does Ballard fit into a tax case?
Well, the IRS said those payments weren't really charitable contributions, so they shouldn't be deductible. But the court citing Ballard said, hey, we can't just jump in and decide whether Scientology beliefs or practices are valid or not.
Right.
They had to accept that those payments were made for sincere religious reasons and not just as a way to, like, dodge taxes.
Ah, so even though it wasn't a typical fraud case, the basic principle from Ballard still applied. They couldn't question the sincerity of their religious belief, even if the IRS thought it was a bit of a, you know, a loophole.
Exactly. And Hernandez is just one example. There have been tons of cases about things like religious exemptions or healthcare regulations where courts have had to figure out where the lines are based on Ballard.
So it seems like Ballard really kind of shook things up in the legal system, but it didn't completely shut down the possibility of holding people accountable for using religion as a shield for, you know, doing bad things. It's more like this ongoing balancing act, right?
That's a great way to put it. Ballard didn't give us a simple answer. It really just exposed this fundamental tension that's built into our legal system. And that tension is probably even more prominent now with the rise of conspiracy theories and groups that try to present themselves as religions.
That's what's so troubling about this whole thing. If Ballard says you can't question even the most far-out beliefs, what's stopping someone from claiming that, say, QAnon or flat earth theories are part of their religion, and then using that to manipulate people or avoid legal consequences? Where do we even begin to draw the line?
That is the big question, isn't it? And the truth is, Ballard doesn't really give us a neat and tidy answer. It leaves us with a lot of gray areas and some really tough questions that courts are still trying to figure out.
So if we take a step back and look at the bigger picture, what's the main takeaway for our listeners? Mm-hmm. What should they be thinking about after we've, you know, waded through all the complexities of United States versus Ballard?
I think the most important thing to remember is that Ballard is a constant reminder of just how complicated religious freedom is in our society.
Yeah.
It shows us how important the First Amendment is and how it protects even beliefs that might seem strange to some people.
Right.
But it also forces us to recognize that these freedoms can be misused.
It's this balancing act that we all have to be aware of, both in the legal system and as individuals.
Absolutely.
We have to be critical thinkers, question what we hear, and be cautious of people who might use religion to take advantage of others.
Couldn't agree more. We can't just be naive, but we also can't let fear chip away at the fundamental right to religious freedom.
It's a delicate dance, for sure, and one that we'll be dealing with for a long time to come.
Definitely.
Well, on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dive into United States versus Ballard. This case really shows us how the law often reflects our biggest societal challenges and how the legal precedents that stick with us the most are often the ones that leave us with more questions than answers. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.